I'm Drat. It's time for the Blunt Force Gamers again.
And that's right. I'm back. Game Goblin, your boy. Sitting here at the table again is...
Moniker.
Kazurkan, the Lord Dragon.
Doth Blasphemous.
And we are a bunch of guys who are angry with a microphone. Two guys, one mic. Wait, no.
You're
sure? Upgrading.
I know.
A mic each.
I know. It's just that I've been spending too much time on YouTube. So, what's our topic this week, gentlemen?
Well, we thought it'd be fun to talk about something we've all experienced whenever I game, which is gaming with props. I mean, you gotta have something there to be like, yes, the epic treasure thing. You got a thing full of pennies that you spray painted gold. Props. Let's do it. Roll the intro.
Well, all right. I'm gonna tip my hat to that, and props to you guys for coming up with the topic. Intro.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
Yes, gentlemen, that's a bird outside because it's getting warm and...
The burbies have returned.
The birdies have returned, and if you hear weird noises in the background, it's because, well, we don't want to sweat our asses off, because four guys in a tiny little ass apartment, it makes us a sweat box, and these guys need to leave their clothes on, in my opinion. I do not want to see anybody going full barbarian in tonight's episode. And, of course, immediately...
It's gonna look like had to open your mouth.
I did. I had to, my bad.
It's going to look like a Manowar album cover in here.
So are we going on props like in tabletop or LARPing? Because you guys know my opinions on LARPing.
True, but it's kind of like the crossover in between. You know, we can definitely start with gaming and using props for your players. Be like, all right, this is a puzzle box and it's like a Rubik's Cube you spray painted and put symbols on or something else. But bringing something physical to the table primarily for your players or as a GM to interact with. You know, you got minis, okay. You got maps, right. You got, right. You know, if you actually hand, like, a rolled up piece of paper that's got a map printed on it, you know, and it doesn't have any legend or direction thing or anything, you just let them play with it.
Actually, props are a great idea. I was first introduced to props back in ancient times.
Oh, man!
It's a tradition that's continued long before I got involved in gaming, and it's continued long after I stopped gaming for a while.
And now you're back. Or not. Or maybe.
Never know. Still trying to play Final Fantasy VIII 3 weeks in a row now. And still, real life aggro and other things say I can't do it. God damn it!
The goblin goes where he pleases and pleases where he goes.
Are you sure you want to make claims like that on his behalf? The second part, mostly.
Actually, he's legit on that one. Sorry, dude, but I have been in some pretty wild parties and have come home going, how the fuck did that happen? And it's stuff that I cannot put on audio, kind of, how did that happen? But regardless, props have been a staple mainstay of gaming for a long time, especially paper handouts in D&D. Like you said, a map. Mm-hmm. It's a great handout. Sometimes GMs will go to the next level and print out, like, most of a NPC's diary. Like, if there's a lot of tricks and traps and puzzles in a dungeon or a dungeon-like scenario, you'll have, like, basically the entire book of how to solve all the riddles and shit already printed out by the GM, and as the characters are going through, he's like, oh, you find a journal, and one of the players goes, oh, well, what's in it? The GM will just hand it to him and go, there you go. And, like, most of the answers to all the riddles and puzzles are in there already. Or there'll be one that we did a long time ago. I was at DreamCon 10, I think, and one of my best GMs that I've ever had handed out invitations to all the players. And the invitation was, of course, addressed to the player character himself. But the player character had immediately the story hook right there in their hands. So you walk up and you're like, hey, I want to join your game. The GM would just hand you an invitation. And the Prince of the City was inviting kindred who were interested in doing a job, basically mercenary work.
That's clever.
So it was really, it gave that tangible feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, another good one that I've seen is, you know, you've got a Dwarven Ruins or something, and everything's written in Dwarven, and including the journal. Now you use a specialty font that's actually a Dwarven runic set. You type it all out in that, and you print it off. It's like, that's what you're given.
That was kind of like the thing I did to you guys years ago when I was doing the vampire game, and I was typing stuff up and using different fonts. And Nej, her character, like, she would tell me out of character, of course, but she thought it was funny that the specific font I was using for that NPC, but it added that extra layer of depth. Mm. That NPC would use such a flowery, giant, cursive-type font to just... because he's a fairy! He's going to use something frilly. But it added that extra layer to the NPC that made them more enjoyable for the player. So props can be fun. They could also be disruptive and annoying.
Yeah, music is a prop. And it's good to have, you know... I do say that a lot. I'm catching myself now.
See? Yeah. Told ya.
Going to try hard not to say, you know, from now on.
You know, that's right. We do a lot of ums, you knows, mhms,
yeah,
k's, yups.
It's good to listen back on your product.
But music is a prop.
Music is a prop.
Yeah, music is a prop. And it's good to have like a, I'm struggling not to say it, but if you want to have...
Say it, we're the Blunt Force Gamers. Tell the
truth.
We
have editing software.
Yeah. But if you want, if you're going to like different settings, you might have... I mean, obviously, you're going to have different sounds, you know, whether you're, like, in the village inn or, you know, the duke's or the baron's palace or their stronghold, you know, versus, like, a cave or a temple.
Or a halfling sex dungeon.
Halfling sex dungeon.
Or the forest. You guys really liked the forest, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And Blasphemous' game here, that's a really good example. But kind of have what you want to listen to picked out in advance, especially if you have it on a huge screen. Because flipping through that stuff can get really distracting. Really distracting.
It's not just that. It can also be distracting for the player if the music... And it's one of those things that I struggled with early on, is the music can drown out the GM.
Yeah.
Or drown out the players.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the trick with that particular aspect of it is to keep it moderate, and on the lower end of moderate, to be honest. Because you don't... You want it to be a background noise, but you don't want it to be exactly like Goblin said, overpowering either the players or the DM. If you have to turn it down for any reason to go, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, for any of the players involved.
Or your players say the same thing.
Or your players play the same thing, it's too loud, and it was to start.
Yeah, for real.
You get kind of like just predict to the group in a way. It's adding music is another layer that's...
It adds immersion.
It does add immersion, but it's also really tricky because, again, volume plays a lot in it, and speaker position. If the speaker is right next to the GM and is pointed towards the players, then they're hearing the sound waves from the speakers before the GM's...
discussion.
Exactly. Music is a touch-and-go kind of thing. It takes a while to master, and even I haven't mastered it. God, that one game, I was just remembering how I fucked it up, you know, by introducing music, and people are like, what? Huh? And then I'd turn it down and be like, huh? What? And then it got to the point where I could barely hear it, and it's sitting right next to me. And it just didn't add anything to the game at that point. Getting the volume level just right is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, and I say this just because I have some friends who actually do use, like metal, like actual bands, like lyrical music is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine if your DM has their own taste in music, but you're way more likely to get your players distracted by, you know...
Like Metallica.
Or even stuff, I mean, usually, you know, like groups like Blind Guardian, Avantasia, that sort of stuff, you know, because it is, like, power metal, and that's usually more nerdy, but especially if the players start getting into the music, then they're just going to be like, what? You know?
Yeah, because now they're jamming out to the music instead of paying attention to the game.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that happening to me.
That actually reminds me of what happened at Atomic Games back in the day, and rest back that game store's hole. Hey, that was a pretty good game store. This was, shit, I was... 20?
Old man!
So, let me go ahead and preface this story by saying that I now have some gold bond in hand. Shooka. Anyway, at Atomic Games, they had a stereo system already strung up inside of the GameStop.
You said it twice now.
What the hell? I meant to say...
I said it earlier.
He said it earlier. Oh, that's what it is.
Last podcast I said it.
Oh. Okay, so in the game store. Aha.
Shop.
Shop-a-pa. In the game Shop-a-pa. They had a stereo system all set up, and we were sitting there, we're playing Dungeons and Dragons, and everybody in the store, because there's a bunch of guys in the other room playing Warhammer, we're in another side room, and we're playing Dungeons and Dragons, and they were playing one of the most awesome classic songs you could ever play for gaming. The movie soundtrack, the original soundtrack to Conan the Barbarian by Basil Poledaris.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Nothing gets you in the mood to want to kick some ass like hearing the Anvil of Crom play. Yeah. So it's going throughout the entire shop, and even the Warhammer guys are like making stupid maneuvers because they just want more action, and us in the D&D room are like, fuck it, I hit him for no goddamn reason. They're like, why? I feel like a barbarian.
You know, kind of going on that. It's not on that level, but what I did in a game I was playing, a 40K game, as listeners probably know by now, I'm a huge orc player. And so I go Evil Suns because I love the whole speed wall, the whole Mad Max vibe. So when we started the game out, I started blasting the soundtrack to Mad Max Fury Road. Especially, it was the one piece, you know, where you first see them all in full force and the flaming guitarist. I played that as I was making my moves.
Best bard ever.
Yeah.
I've seen audio as a prop used so damn artistically, it was mind-boggling. I was playing a game of Chill, which is a horror-themed roleplay. So we are all put together in a... I'm trying to break it down. It was a theater. Of course, this is old-school theater, not new-school. So they actually had, like, the balconies up above and all the weird side rooms for, like, telephones and shit. You know, so we're talking kind of like more of an old-timey feel to the theater itself.
Those are the best ones. Those are just spooky by default.
Yeah, it was just spooky by default, yeah. So, yeah. Like, the GM describes, you know, that every hallway we're walking in is, like, carpeted. There's drapes all over the place. It feels like an old, spooky theater. And in the background, she had, off to the side, just playing really low. So if the entire room shut up, you could hear it. But if anybody started talking as to what their character was doing or interacting with the GM or environment, you didn't hear the music at all. So she's got that playing in the background, and like about 20, 30 minutes into the game session, one of the guys is like, is that piano music I hear? And Jim is like, yeah. And he's like, shh, shh, everybody shut up. So everybody got quiet for a moment, and you know, he's like, well, is this music just for, you know, us in the room, or is this actually happening in game? And the GM says, well, this is actually happening all throughout the theater. You hear this music.
Hmm.
And I was like, that is so cool. So whenever it got quiet, you heard this spooky-ass piano music. And I don't know who was playing it or where she got it, but it was a very spooky, somber song that was put on a loop. And it was playing throughout the entire game. So whenever anybody got quiet, you were reminded that this weird melody was being played all throughout the in-game world as well. Dude. So it helped set the tone. It was really great.
Was it integral to the plot, the piano music? Was it...
Yeah, it was integral. We found out later in the game that the music itself was the carrier signal for subliminal messaging.
Okay.
So our characters in the spooky-ass theater, which was actually like some sort of weird psyop, psychic reprogramming site. All of our characters were psychics and were latent. They were trying to tap into our psychic abilities and program us to be weapons and shit. But we didn't know this because we're just average civilians who wake up in a fucking hospital that's underneath a theater kind of shit. It was...
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, that spooky, you know, creepy, where's a laboratory not supposed to be kind of scenario.
Yeah.
The problem was, is the scientists had picked out, like, this eldritch music to be the carrier wave. So they were trying to program us through subliminal messaging to be, you know, good government killing robots, men who stare at goats kind of style. And the carrier wave actually was also composed by some composer in-game that was the lore, who was off of his rocker nuts and was a Cthulhu worshiper. So their science experiment went completely batshit wrong because the music actually was the tonal qualities to summon the Eldritch ones. So right. When they were doing their experiment, shit went wrong because dark forces were trying to come through the realm of reality and into our realm. And because we're psychics, we subconsciously picked up on it. But as a prop, that piano music was very pivotal to the game. And like I said, whenever we got quiet, we heard it. And it reminded us as to... there's more going on. So during quiet moments when we're looking at character sheets, we're not like just going, oh, well, this is my strength score. Oh, this is my drive stat. Oh, this is my investigation skill. We're like reminded as we're sitting there, we hear the music and we're like, oh yeah, we're still trapped in the theater and need to escape.
I like that a lot. I wish I could be there for that. That sounds great.
That was one of the best games that I got into a single play session of, and I kind of miss games being that way.
Some serious immersion.
It was very serious immersion.
I always feel like the piano just... It's one of those instruments where you could be playing something like Bohemian Rhapsody, the piano score to that. If you're in the right scenario, that could be the creepiest song you'll ever hear, you know what I mean? If it's not in the right place, just, ugh.
You also gotta remember the pricing of props. I'm gonna delve into a little bit of LARP territory here, because it's one thing that we really don't delve into very much, and I'm like the only person who's LARPed in this room.
Not quite. I've done it once or twice.
I haven't.
I've been to like 3 SCA events. That's really about it, and I was more of a sideline guy.
I used to do LARP a long time ago in this shitty-ass organization called the Glamorilla. And I still say, fuck you, Outlands. Oh, well, the GM, anyway. Anyhow, dude, he docked me XP for being out of game when I was supposed to be out of game. What the fuck? Anyway, long story. It's
bullshit.
It is a very bullshit story, and I still want to break some kneecaps over it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I got a grudge. What can I say?
That's just frowned upon.
When it comes to props, one of the things to remember about your props also is price tag. Like, if you're doing LARPing and you get into a LARP group that wants to have you dress up in full costume, just to go on the internet and buy something passable for a LARP game, you really should be invested in that fucking character and pray to God that character doesn't die. Let's say you're playing, we're going to use that one of the most classic names. You're Lothar the Warrior. And you buy a half-plate suit of armor to wear in character. It's made out of foam. You're still looking at an easy price tag of around $200.
Easy. On the low end.
On the low end,
and that's if you're of small stature.
Yeah.
And so a guy my size is screwed.
Yeah, a guy your size is screwed, but still, you're looking at a healthy investment. And even at the game table itself, if you go out and you start buying props for your games, there's going to be a price tag. I mean, how important is the prop to your game? How important is the prop to the characters? If you're playing a character, how important is the prop to your character to play that character? Because if that character dies, you're out some money and all you got is a really cool conversation piece. And chances are, if you try to use that prop again for another character, it's not going to pan out very well.
Unless the character already fits into roughly the same archetype. Like an archer, getting yourself a, you know, bow-type tool. You can go archer to archer to archer, or archer to rogue, or archer to whatever. And it's a relatively safe tool to have, because it is a diverse option. But something like the Battle Axe of Smiting, you're not going to find a rogue that's using the Battle Axe of Smiting. Not typically.
Well, it's like a wooden mask I have in the other room was bought for me for Christmas way back when. Super cool, awesome mask. I mean, it's totally tiki-tiki, man. There are days I just want to, like, grab a sharpened stick and run outside wearing nothing more than this mask and just stab random passerbys because the mask has that much coolness to it. It is awesome.
I can all too easily picture that. I'm sorry.
If only I had a grass skirt to go with it.
Well, it's warming up. That'll become a lot easier. We just got to talk to the lawn mowing guy.
You know, actually, we should go camping this year just so I can wear that mask out in the forest and creep out like the other campers in the middle of the night.
We make it ultra creepy. We take glow sticks. We crack them. We break them open and we just do some drips.
Exactly. This mask is super hella awesome. And I can only imagine how much the person who bought it for me paid for it, because it's easily a $75 mask on bottom end. It's all wood, well, maybe even more, because it's carved out of wood entirely, and the jaw is held to the top with leather straps nailed on inside.
Okay, after we're done podcasting, I need to see this.
It's in a box somewhere,
yeah.
And it's got like this wicker thing to hold it on top of your head.
Oh.
You know, so there's nothing plastic about it. There is not one piece of plastic on this entire mask. It is great. So I'm looking at this mask. I'm thinking, you know, easily $75 unless they bought it, you know, at some mass-produced shop that sells ethnic goods for cheap kind of thing. Like, we have a few of those stores around here. Regardless, though, if I was wearing this mask for a character, so I'm playing, like, a feral gnome or whatever, and I put the mask on whenever I'm in character, I can no longer use this mask if that character dies. Not for any other character, because it becomes associated with that character.
Yeah, I would say a safe thing to do is maybe don't go all out, you know, on your wallet until maybe you have some experience in, be it role-playing or LARPing or whatever, because, yeah, then you get into situations like, Chasm Goblin and Blasphemous have described. It's like, you're out all this money, you're out of a character. Cool centerpiece, though, you know?
Yeah, it's a cool centerpiece, but you're out of that character. Because if I was to wear that mask with any other character, nobody would buy it. Because they would also, other players, not just myself, would associate that mask with that character. Like, I go back on the previous alliteration I made. If somebody was to buy a suit of half-plate armor for their LARP character in a live-action game, and they're, you know, Lothar the Warrior, Lothar gets ganked. If they had that armor custom-made or made through a maker who does little specialty things to make it stand out from the rest of the foam armors they make, then it's unique enough that if Lothar dies and he comes back with a new character who's a fighter and still wears the same armor, there's that weird disconnect people are going to have. It's really strange that they can't really break away from the old character to the new one.
It forces a lasting tie. And the thing is, like, having played a lot of characters, don't you dare again.
No. After you're done, I've got
okay. Next. There are... You kind of have to be ready and willing to let characters die and separate yourself from the character. And this is just a general gaming facet.
I love killing players. Characters.
Nice save.
What?
Huh?
If there was a little more of a pause, it would be a save.
What? What are you talking about?
But the thing about that is, like, that custom armor that Lothar had, well, unless the new character finds it in the world, there is no justifiable reason for him to be wearing Lothar's armor. It's a hallback.
He was a hireling!
So, I've got it. My father's armor, my uncle's armor, my cousin's armor. Totally works.
Right? And
My little sister's armor, wait, what?
Hey, you know what? It works.
She was a tomboy, okay? Deal with it.
Right.
Okay, to be honest, boob armor is a terrible idea. Armor should definitely be protective and, you know...
All the way.
Yeah, it shouldn't be super form-fitting, because you're supposed to have padding and stuff. Well, yeah, I totally support...
Dude, if we're going to get on that topic of armor that has boobs hammered into it, that's already stupid enough to begin with, because armor is meant to deflect the blows away from the body. That's why it's shaped the way it is.
About as useful as nipples on a breastplate.
Anyway, we're talking about props.
So, my thing with props, I like to just do prop stuff from what I have on hand. Just stuff I've got around. Like, I'm using a God's Eye in my campaign, which is something that finds the MacGuffins, the items that the players need to do. It's just something I've got along with my Sith Holocron. So it's just something I had around the house. The box I used to, you know, use as a treasure chest. I made that in high school too goddamn long ago.
Old man!
Hey, I'm staring down 30 here, guys.
Oh my god, he's staring down 30. Shit. I mean, you are in for one hell of a ride.
I mean, if this was like 100 years ago, yeah, you'd be an old man.
And by one hell of a wild ride, I'll just go down to the corner market and get you your walker with little tennis balls on the front.
Yeah.
Oh, well, how are you going to carry it home since you're going to be using one too?
Easy. Mine's got a gun rack.
But I mean, that's definitely something you can do. Like, if you're someone like me or our buddy Narcissus, where you have this habit of impulse buying some things and they come with all this cool extra stuff, like, totally just go through and be like, can I use this in a campaign to totally make a convincing something or other? Some of the easy props I've got are, you know, the roll trays I've got, you know, just so dice don't get away from people. I'll totally take those and fill it with, like, pennies and be like, this is the treasure you find. They're like, what? It's a bunch of copper. I'm like, no, they're gold coins, quote unquote.
Or that leather-bound book you gave to me for my half-orc. That thing is fantastic.
So yeah, I picked this up at con, 6 years ago? And it's a leather-bound book. It's got a tree on the front, a bunch of Celtic knots, some little, you know, filigree. On the back, it's got some more floral pattern. It's got a little lock on it. It opens, and it's just a bunch of blank pages because I was going to use it to do my family history, because we actually have it. And it's just a cool thing. I just never got around to using it, so now I just use it as a prop.
I like it. That thing is legit.
Yeah, some games actually, no joke, they endorse props. One of my favorites that I encountered was Wraith the Oblivion. Stupid fucking old game. But I really loved Wraith. One of the things that you had going on in Wraith is the players would all play another person's shadow. Which, unfortunately, knowing the maturity level of players, not that great of an idea. But in concept...
Jokes for years.
Hey, it worked great in concept. Basically, I'm a person, but you're playing my dark side. So we randomly hand out that Blasphemous is playing my shadow. Kazrakan is playing his own character, and I'm playing his shadow. So we just basically mix it all up. You know, Moniker's playing too, and then he plays Blasphemous's shadow. When the shadow is talking to you, basically you'd have like a paper mask or a plastic mask or something, just whatever to cover your face. Covering. Just a face covering. So when you're talking to that other character wearing the mask, you're playing their shadow. So you're essentially playing two characters at one time. And props can help you differentiate, you know, if you're doing a character with multiple personalities, for example. Or in Wraith, if the shadow is talking, or is the character talking. So when the shadow is talking, you put the mask on. So everybody else around the table knows that, no, the player's not being a douche. The shadow is intentionally a douche, and being a douche like it's scripted to be. Yeah. Some games really endorse props, and some props can go a long way.
One that I do, if you guys remember our first Radcon videos, the one about Sinister Steel. So I bought a crown after we did the video. Literally, the crown I pick up and admire how beautiful it is. When I'm playing my evil bard character, I put that on because it represents the artifact I have, the Crown of the Bard King. And it's just something I wear to be like, I'm in character, and I take it off when I'm speaking as the GM or out of character to bullshit with everyone, because we do that a lot.
Yeah, it does. It really helps the GM when they're playing a character like that. You know, say the crown, for example. When the GM is speaking in a different person's shoes, you know, a prop can really help out, bring that out. Like, for myself personally, my style, you guys all know, and I can't really convey it to the listeners, but I do a lot of body language changing. Or when I was doing the vampire game a while back, like, I would sit with my hands folded in my lap, my knees together, I'd slunch my shoulders, and that was when you guys knew that you were talking to the princess. But at the same time, when I was playing the old man character, I would slouch to one side on the railing a little bit, bob my head to the side, and, you know, just kind of, like, move a lot slower. So I'd use body language as well. A combination of props and body language can really make an NPC
come to life.
Yeah, and just really pop.
And if you have the thespian skill to pull it off, a distinctive voice for them.
An accent.
That's...
If you can pull off an accent.
If you can pull it off, and do so consistently.
With this brother, bugger off.
Comrade, bugger off, and his sister, I want a spank off.
There we go. There's our... there it is.
and then there's always Shadwell.
And then there's always Marvin the Martian, who's lost his Q-39 space modulator. Drat.
lots of characters are really defined by the voice, and in that same way, the body language, the voice, those are props that were put in to help with immersion.
As a wise man once said, characters are their voices. It's like cartoon or, you know, something like here. Voice is the number one key to that character.
Yeah, voice, inflection, the pace of speaking. Don't know if you guys caught on to it, but a lot of my NPCs in the older games do speak wildly differently than one another. I mean, there's times when I, Amy. There are times, you know, when I'm narrating, of course, I'm speaking just as I am now. A little too fast, slurring all words from my partially paralyzed face, and just generally throwing words out really fast and going blah, 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 every fifth or sixth word. But when I'm narrating a character, from maybe LARP experience or maybe, you know, taking drama back in school, I change how I speak as well. So, like his character in the superhero game recently, whenever he's being spoken to by his other voice, I always fold my hands together and lean forward, kind of like a praying mantis. You know, that lurking violence that just wants to come out and play.
It works really well. It does.
So, quick question. Show of hands, and I'll do the count off to our listeners. How many people were in drama for at least a school year? No one else? I actually was in drama class, and my primary stuff besides acting was doing prop stuff in background.
I got kicked out.
I mean, I technically have prop experience because of marching band, but that is a whole other story. We were called the Propatones, and there was lots of cussing involved.
Well, fuck.
No. Yeah. Bet you a bunch of limey cunts.
Too right, mate.
Too right.
And I've got exactly fuck all. But, like, on props, you know, you can get some really neat things, like, as puzzle boxes. You know, I've got a little nifty hand puzzle, like a five-pointed star in a box, right? Just two simple solid metal pieces, mostly. And, you know, the goal is to find the right path to get the little flower piece out of the box and then back in into its start position.
Props are one of those things that it's kind of like it's either too much or it's not enough.
Yeah.
Props are one of those weird areas of gaming. Because you can make a character, you can write down a bunch of stats, and if you decide to include a prop to help demonstrate that character to the rest of the people at the party, it could be anything like a silly hat if you're playing kind of a bard character, or a monk who, you know, always wears a traditional bandana or something like that. If you're doing live-action roleplay, there are people who will wear a specific prop. The thing is, if that character dies...
We're back to this again.
You're back to this again, or... It's not enough to convey that your character's a badass. Say if you're playing a Bruja in a vampire live-action game and you've got this spiked jacket on, it's really cool, it's just over the top.
You have this mohawk.
You got the mohawk and everything. It could be too much. You know, you might go past what looks like a cool thug to fat guy in his 40s with a beer gut trying to pass off, trying to be young again, which doesn't really work too well.
I think if you're going to go full costume, kind of, you know, test the waters with the rest of your group. Because, I mean, if the rest of them aren't into it, you know, and you show up...
Bedecked?
And, yeah, bedecked. You're going to...
You're going to stand out.
Yeah, you're going to stand out.
You show up in a cloak with a plastic sword. I am the wizard! It's like, dude, just shut up and have some pizza.
Like, I'm totally behind, as a GM, having a robe, you know, a cloak or something. When you're speaking in GM voice, you pull the hood up and it's like, you enter the dungeon. A foul odor of flesh creeps up upon you.
So I'm in the girls' locker room.
Stuff like that, you know, where
you meant dungeon.
Dungeon.
Okay.
So yeah,
he missed the word rotting. That's the only thing he missed.
I did not miss that.
But, you know, that's something that's kind of cool to do, but you don't want to be, like, full-on wizard robes and... You know, you pull the hood up and you put on the skull mask that no one can understand you through, you know. That's going a bit far, but when you've got simple stuff of, you know, all right, my character totally, you know, has this thing, so I'm going to, like, put it on when I'm speaking in character. That way it's easier for everyone to know I'm out of character when I have that off.
Yeah, props that cover your mouth are always a bad idea.
Yeah.
Always.
Fake beards, bad idea. They're itchy.
Fake beards are itchy. ninja masks, right out. Pretty much anything other than the thin veil of cloth over your face. Because gaming is a social
environment.
It is. It's a very social environment. And how are you going to run a game sounding like that?
Now the can't all be Kenny.
Yeah. Now the other thing that you can do is if you're playing a character that doesn't talk much, that isn't social, or that is very hard to understand, it becomes an accentuating point to wear something that does go against these rules and kind of muffles your voice. You know, it's a tricky thing, but if it's part of the way the character is, it can add immersion.
Yeah, I mean, if you can find a way to make it work, then go for it. Go for it, really.
So if I can make it work, you know what? I can't wait to see if we ever play a Western game. Because I'll go in the other room, and I'll get my my black powder gun, and I'll get myself some, like, leather pants that are made out of elk skin and a raccoon skin hat. Yeah. I'll just sit on the couch, you know, sitting there playing with my, you know, ball and powder musket. That thing is fucking heavy. I'd hate about, like, 10 minutes in the game. That gun weighs so much, but hey, I would look like a cool, like, trapper for a while.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
I don't even know where he got that one from. double movie reference. Something I actually do, and it's kind of a prop, I have a... shirt that says GM, Weaver of Lore and Fate, something like that. And I bought it specifically to wear anytime that I am GMing. Because then it's like, alright, we're sitting down at table, I'm wearing the GM shirt, listen to me, pay attention.
You know, it's kind of funny, your style of GMing is so radically different from mine when it comes to clothing.
Yeah.
Because my GM shirt officially just says, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
That is my official GM shirt. It's in the other room.
That explains why you had it on every time we gamed.
Yes, that's why it was either that one or it was the one that says, I'm not always an asshole, haha, fuck you. Those were my two primary GMing shirts.
Wait, you wore the Wonder Woman part of the time. That was because of laundry.
It was laundry day. But yeah, my official GM shirt says, shut the fuck up.
I like it.
Yeah.
God, you remember when we used to play that vampire game every week?
That was fun.
It was interesting.
Yeah, we kept that up for like 2 months.
We also had props in that game.
We did.
We did. We occasionally, a prop would show up in the game. I would pass something out on the GM side, or a player would bring in something and be like, ah, my player has this. And I'd be like, it's a Pez dispenser. That is not a bomb clicker.
It had Hello Kitty, so we thought you'd like it.
I only have Hello Kitty lighters because nobody will steal them.
Actually, I think we were thinking of Iami when at the time.
Oh, Iami?
Because yeah. Iami had the biggest thing for Hello Kitty.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Iami had the... That, you know, we need to do an episode on that, too, here in the future. Maybe next week, is how to build NPCs that are more three-dimensional.
Memorable.
How to breathe life into them, which I will go back on to Peck about, because I breathe life into them in about 30 seconds.
Well, a lot of the NPCs that I made, and I do my own tricks on that. That's a more of a GM topic, though, but there are ways to build characters that are much more memorable.
And, you know, the advice of how to make a character feel like it has depth can go for both sides of the fence. You know, mm-hmm. a player and a DM can both benefit from that.
Well, like he was saying earlier, you know, he'll wear his crown when he's in bard mode. You know, props also work for NPCs as well. So if your game only has a handful of super important NPCs that are going to be showing up, props are a good idea. He could pull that cane out from the corner over there, and every time they're talking to, say, the King Regent, he's sitting in the chair, you know, with both hands folded over his cane, and that will communicate non-verbally to the players that they're talking to the king.
I could take that xenomorph skull over there when I'm playing my occultist who can summon a whole bunch of skeletons. Because whenever a skeleton's talking, I hold up the skull and shake it as I talk.
No, actually, for the xenomorph skull, I could actually see that as more of a Bond villain.
Yeah.
Where you, like, hold it in one hand and pet it like a cat.
It's the size of a fucking cat.
It is the size of a fucking cat.
It looks like a penis.
I think it's part of the point. I mean, H.R. Giger did a lot of sensual, and I use that word loosely, and I use the word loosely, a lot of abnormal art.
Yes.
That was quite risque in its overall tone.
Welcome to Blunt Force Gamers After Dark.
Yeah, that series is coming up.
Blunt Force Gamers After Dark?
Oh, why God, not? Yes.
What are we going to do? Start talking about adult mods?
Why not?
Sure.
How to handle sex in-game?
Well, it's easy. There are some mods that you just do not want to download. Trust me. I'm like, what is this? Click, click, click. And then the game shows me props in-game, and I'm like, nope, nope, nope. Delete, delete, delete.
You forgot a delete in there.
Let's go back to previous save now. Good night.
That would actually be an interesting topic. Like, how should GMs handle sex in games?
Easy. Sex in games is one of the easiest things to handle, bar none. Fade to black.
Yeah. Classic, old school, black and white movie. Oh, he gets a kiss and the camera pans away and it fades to black. Fade in the next day.
There's... For almost any group, and it, you know, just... You could have new gamers at the table, you could have older gamers at the table, you can have men at the table, you can have women at the table. You could have a disabled transgender clown in a wheelchair who's part Aborigine from Ireland and speaks Chinese as a primary language. Am I going far enough off the rails here?
Far enough.
This sounds like one particular character you've pulled on us.
No, it's not a character. But I'm just saying that when you're handling sex in games... It doesn't matter who you are. You can fade to black and almost everybody's comfortable with it. Player character goes in, you know, the classic scenario. Players go into the tavern. Barbarian has a couple of drinks and he's like, I want a whore. Jim's like, okay, it'll cost you 25 silver pieces for the night because this is a high class one. Fade to black. It's like you go up to your room and you're having fun. We're done. And if the player tries to, you know, expand on that, you know, while everybody else is doing something, like, well, how's stuff going in the bedroom? You just be like, make a roll. You know, make a stamina check. That's about as far as you go. And you just fast forward their character to the next morning. Done.
Well, one of the things to elaborate there is people are... The super charismatic bard is always trying to seduce whoever is there.
I said slay the dragon, damn it.
Slay the dragon, not lay the dragon.
But yeah, you know, stuff like that we could definitely get onto another day. But going back to props in-game, I mean, what's some stuff you guys have brought into game, like... Do you play a certain song when your character's in combat, or what's something you guys have done for your characters, or as a GM, for something a prop you really need to use? Music, lighting?
As a GM, I have found that there are some really, really good boss fight tracks. Like, they build the suspense, they build the tension, and it feels climactic. That whatever the fight you're in has importance.
Final Fantasy soundtracks always come in handy in my experience.
That's what I fell asleep to last night, in fact.
Video game soundtracks are really, really good for this. And also, there's a few of them that are, like, my personal favorite is a preamble to another song.
I also like, for musical tracks, anything done by Nox Arcana.
God, yes. Nox Arcana are so good.
You could just, like, buy one of their CDs and knock out a few tracks here and there because either they have vocals or they don't fit the theme. And just knock those few tracks out and play the album from beginning to end, and it's perfect. Shit. Pirate Campaign? Totally. They got an album for that. Haunted House? Boom. Album for that.
Yeah, Darkmoor Manor, I think.
Darklore Manor. They also have another track for just adventuring itself.
Yeah.
It sounds just like a movie soundtrack, so. Music? Totally.
Brunaville, Two Steps from Hell.
Yeah.
Thomas Bergeson. Those are all really good ambient sort of... mostly non-vocal.
Basil Polidaris. Anvil of Crom.
Matthias Pamula. Or Pamula, or however you say his name.
I actually like... I've been looking up stuff just so I can prepare a playlist for my next game sesh. The Lord of the Rings soundtrack for that background, no vocal kind of stuff, really sounds great. I'm also looking at other stuff, you know, other sci-fi movies and trying to track down certain songs or tracks they used in their background and stuff like that, but... you know, that's all what it is. Music definitely comes into it.
Also, for an aspiring GM, there are also tracks out there that are phenomenal, made by independent artists who are just doing stuff with a computer, mixing sounds. Some of them I have on my computer that I can play, not have to pay attribution or anything like that, but I just love what they did with the composition. You could also just port these right over to running in your game and not even worry about media whatsoever. So they're very thematic. So you could do, like I've got on my system right now, something that's ambient Far Eastern, of course. Ambient Mid-Eastern, like Northern Mid-Eastern, more Mongolia. I've got some tracks in there that sound very Mesoamerican. So if you want kind of that sound, you know, that like the characters going through the jungles or whatever, boom, I've got a track for that.
There's also sites like the Bardscape or, you know, all sorts of cool stuff that are specifically catering to... DMs and ambient sound effects, you know.
Yeah, as much as I liked Sirenscape and the library that they had, it is a subscription-based service where you buy packets of music and then you get to use it unlimited for free or whatever. No, you still have to attribute them if it gets broadcast.
Right, but attribution is easy to do. It's
easy to do. It's pretty common.
Yeah, at the tail end, you just go, this music is blah, 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 made by this artist, found on this site. Bump, dunk.
Simple enough, but there are...
it's a bunch of legalese.
There's a bunch of legalese beyond that. It's kind of like using comic book characters and trying to publish them. There are certain things you can and cannot do, even when paying proper attribution.
Yeah, I think a lot of this advice only goes if you're going to, like, I don't know, maybe put your campaigns and videos and stuff. I mean, because if you're just running a campaign with your friends around the table, I mean, you know...
Absolutely.
No company's going to come breathing down your neck then, like...
Well, what I'm trying to say is, for GMs especially, is when they're doing music...
Yeah.
You know, go ahead, branch out, reach really far into the internet, because there is stuff out there that's free that they can use to help bring ambience to the game that nobody's heard of. It will be completely new to your players. So if you dig deep in the internet and you can find stuff out there that's absolutely free and professionally quality made, you can bring this in as a prop for your game and you don't have to spend a dime on it just to spend time. Whereas if you go to Sirenscape, it's a subscription-based service. So this as a prop has a limitation to it that is severe. And as a subscription, you know, if you cancel your subscription, you no longer have access to your sounds. Yay!
Music in particular is one of those ones that you kind of have to caveat yourself with and just be mindful of it. I know people who will purchase songs on, like, iTunes, so they've got it to listen to on their own time, and they just play it for their game group.
True.
As long as they're not trying to broadcast it, it's...
To get to Blasphemous's question, though, I am a huge fan of handouts.
Oh, yeah, handouts. Like, you were really good about handouts, too.
I'm a huge fan of those, yeah.
Another prop you used was the Facebook group we had. This is a definitely great thing to use for any game group. If you're all on Facebook, create a Facebook group that's closed. Invite only your players.
Screw Facebook. Go Discord.
Discord works too.
Yeah.
Discord works too and actually would work better these days.
Yeah, these days. But do a private group on whatever social media you can do it on.
Or want to.
Yeah, that way, because when I was doing the Facebook group, You know, and you can do this on Discord as well. A GM can share pictures. You know, so they find a really cool picture that, you know, fits the theme and narrative of their campaign. And be like, oh, this is the monster you see in the sewers. You know, after the GM has described and everything they've gone through the encounter. But maybe the monster survived. So they're like, they slap up a little thing, leave a blurb, and be like, yeah, this is what you saw in the sewers. So the players have that mental image from then on, and they can actually refer back to that electronically.
And down here, we all float.
Yeah. Now, the other thing
that... Ooh, root beer float.
Now, the other thing that he's done with this, like, with that same group, he's done news stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah. Straight-up news clippings that were within the world. Full-on, you know, basically little columnals.
Yeah, I would take news clip stories from legitimate news stories and, of course, put a huge spin on them for that supernatural aspect or whatever, because it was vampire. So when you guys are reading the news in character, or, you know, an important blurb would come up on TV, you'd get a news report. And players, I think, resonate with the amount of effort the GM is putting into the game itself. Plus, it gives that extra bit of information that players would be like, well, I saw it on the news, it must be true, or this could be a potential masquerade break.
Yeah, and it's about immersion. And it's also about respecting how much effort you're putting into it. Because if the game group is not respecting the DM and how much effort they're putting in, you know, biggest dickus and naming culture, we're going to go back to this.
Oh, yeah, we're going back to that episode.
If you have a biggest dickus and a Sir Reginald III, which one of them do you think is taking the game seriously?
Well, it's like, for me, especially with handouts, like I was mentioning when we were doing live action a long time ago, the GM handed out invitations to all our characters. Before we even sat down at the table, he's like, oh, you're interested in the game? And he just hand over an invitation and be like, this is for your character. That was really cool. At the same token, you can pull the same thing this right now. Any GM can pull this. The players all sit down at the table and they're like, well, what's the story? And the GM could open up by saying, well, you enter town and you're looking at the bulletin board and there's a lot of bounties, but otherwise not much is going on. Or how much cooler would this be if the GM just slapped down like 3 or 4 bounties with profile pictures already on them and what they're wanted for and the price tag for capturing them. So the players are like, oh, what do we have for adventure? And just bam, 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 slapped on the table. There's 3 really good high price bounties that the city has put out. That alone right there would really hook people. It would just draw them in almost instantly to see that like physical, tangible wanted poster right on the table.
Makes me want to do a Western campaign.
I'll go in the other room and I'll get my gun.
Dude, your tiki mask could go pretty well for that, too.
You know, they brought the savage back.
Whoa, we're just taking it back.
Props I find are really fun. Like, my main stuff I know from is from Lord Goblin's campaign, and when both Kazrakan and then now Moniker, the campaign I've run, where it's a lot of props, I hand you little things. You know, it's a little wooden piece that looks like a sword. When it's like, alright, you find this sword. That's the smallest piece I think I've ever used. Other times, it's like, alright, you guys find this box and roll to open it. And it takes a while until someone gets the correct roll to actually physically open the box, and there's a bunch of stuff inside. Pennies I spray-painted gold, or, you know, something wrapped up in a cloth, they have to figure out what it is.
Yeah, because props can, if they're used correctly, can add another layer of depth to the game, hardcore.
Yeah.
You can really drive the nail home. Say if the players are playing a war campaign and you have a wooden toy soldier, the players are going through town, they're examining the wreckage, doing stuff, and you can just like, oh, here, you found this, and hand it to one of your players and be like, you found this nearby the hand of one of the children. Because that physical, tangible emotion of holding it in your hand, you know, the GM saying, oh, you found this toy next to a dead child. That actually would hit people on an emotional level a lot more than saying, oh, it's just a kid laying in the mud with a toy next to him.
Yeah, it brings depth to the world, and it's engaging in that regard. And it's like, there's something morbid about holding a dead child's toy in your hand. It's like, shit.
Yeah, as a player, it's kind of like it's a psychological trick that people can use, and I've seen it used multiple times by certain individuals, is there's that connection. If you reach over and touch somebody on the arm, when you're saying something, it is a psychological trick to convey you're telling the truth. So, I'm trying to tell Moniker over here that I'm wearing women's underwear, and, you know, he'd be like, haha, but if I reach over and put my hand on him as I say it, it'll, like, put that...
Changes the context.
It changes the context, and it'll put that seed of doubt in his head.
I have no reason to doubt you're wearing women's underwear.
Actually, I'm wearing my Star Wars underwear. Anyway.
Not looking up the kilt. Not this time.
I've already had one person randomly comment on my kilt outside, but anyway. The point is, making physical contact or putting something tangible in somebody's hand that they can feel. Yes. Little wood. It's a psychological trick that will add depth and gravitas to the prop. So it doesn't matter. I can take a really crappy knife I found at a secondhand store. You know, and if it looks rustic and it looks used, looks like the kind of knife you'd expect a woodsman or a huntsman to be using, and I hand that knife to somebody and say, oh, you found this, you know, nearby the corpse, it adds something psychological, because the person is actually sitting there holding the knife in their hand going, I found this, and you'd be like, yes, that knife exactly.
Yeah.
It's a psychological trick, but it adds impact.
Yeah, or maybe the day before the campaign, like a little wooden toy. Actually go out, find a nice little muddy patch, just leave it in there overnight. Somewhere, you know, like if someone isn't going to run off of it.
Hopefully.
You don't want to overuse this prop, but again, every few game sessions or so, you can add just that extra slap-in-the-face layer psychologically to one of your players, especially if they're trying to play, say, a good character, and they want to do right, and then you're like, here's a prop, and you toss it in their hand, and how are they going to respond to that? Especially if the player themselves really are uncomfortable with such situations, and would like to explore what it'd be like to be, like, an Avenger of the Innocent kind of scenario.
Yeah, you know, if, like, your GM's a surgeon, he might work removing body parts. Have him bring some home.
Yeah, it's kangaroo meat.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, another way to
Russia,
look at
do
it.
Do as the Russians would do, my brother.
Another way to look at it is, as a player, do you bring any props? You're like, oh, my character totally has just this random stuffed Tarrasque. We've all heard the story of the stuffed Tarrasque, I'm sure.
It's been on the podcast, I think.
I think so.
I do not recall recording it, but we probably have. I know I've seen that story.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still, like, more moved by Oogie.
Oh, true.
Oogie got me, man. So that was a good story.
The stuffed Tarrasque. This guy, they were rolling up stuff for just stuff they carry on him, stuff in his pack. So he said, well, I've got a stuffed Tarrasque. Just randomly. Just got off a table or something, or it was in a list of something. It's just randomly there.
Like a stuffy.
Yeah. So, over the course of the campaign, the GM seemed to have a bent to figure out why and or destroy the item. So finally, during one big epic campaign, the character's backpack gets torn open and the stuffed Tarrasque gets destroyed.
Immolated, I believe it was, right?
I think so.
Yeah, caught on fire or something.
Yeah, it was destroyed in the end result, though.
Yeah. He ends up creating this backstory to why he had it. How it was, you know, something from his childhood, you know.
How your parents make things go away when they think you're not looking.
Yeah.
Because you're too old for it.
But yeah, it was a point of social commentary at that point. It was well done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, doing something like that as a player, like, some of us like to bring a good luck charm, a tchotchke or something. And if you bring that into your player actually has something like that. Like, I'm superstitious about my dice. Well, certain sets of dice.
Almost everybody who plays any sort of role-playing game is superstitious about their dice.
Yeah.
Yep.
And perhaps that well should be, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, like, if I was in a Star Wars campaign, I would totally bring one of my lightsabers and just have it on the table.
You know, one of the things I've always thought would be kind of do at our shop is, for my 40k group, is, like, in 40k everyone has banners, you know, like, each army has, like, their banner. I thought it'd be cool after each time we did a game, whoever won, like, I could go to the craft store, just make some banners for each faction, and whoever won that day, it gets to hang in the shop until the next time we game.
That'd actually be cool as fuck.
That would be really cool. Another really good way to use things like puzzle pieces. You brought up the idea of spray painting a Rubik's Cube. Crazy idea.
Covered in runes?
Yes. Now, here's the thing. Parts of runes. You set it up so that if you line it up in the right way, it forms a single rune on one side.
I have such sights to show you.
And then you create a wall puzzle that requires this piece as the key, but it's all messed up to start.
Props are like riddles. In this instance, I'm sorry to interrupt you on this one, but exactly, like, I'm going back on props, you know, either it's not enough or it's too much. Riddles are the same way. So you're combining two things. Now you're juggling not one teeter-totter, but two teeter-totters at the same time. I'm just saying, in my experience as a GM and a player, people have a tendency to overthink things, or overlook things, or think too much about things. Riddles and puzzles and props combined You're looking at either like the most cool thing ever done, or just an absolute dumpster fire filled with the babies of dead orcs.
You get all the pieces of the room together, you put them in the big thing, they form a giant dick.
A giant golden dick, which is strangely in 8 pixels per block or some crap like that, Minecraft style. Just saying.
It could be done.
It's a cool idea.
It would just involve actually saving players.
It's just your players would probably screw around with 4 hours before even getting the first clue as to what to do about it.
Probably. Yeah.
Or your game group would actually have a legitimate autist in it, because I do know quite a few autistic kids who play D&D, and one of them can solve a Rubik's Cube in 30 seconds. I've tried to fuck with him many times doing this, and he always beats me. Always. I'll like screw around with a Rubik's Cube for 45 minutes mixing that up. 30 seconds later, he's just blup, 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 done. And if you get an autistic kid in your game group and you hand him that Rubik's Cube with a rune on it, yeah.
It's done.
Yeah, all that prepping and planning you've just done is for nothing. That kid will own you.
Yeah, use that as a problem. You know, just have the token autistic kid at your table.
You know, I could, but I'd have to feed him tacos constantly because that kid loves tacos.
Wait, have you ever
Which
given
is all the reason more like him. He's a gamer, loves metal, and loves tacos.
Hell yeah.
This kid is awesome.
Have you introduced him to Choco Tacos yet?
I don't know. But the weirdest part is, when he gets drunk, he turns super chatty. Like, you cannot shut him up when he's drunk, but if he's completely sober, he won't say word one to you except for maybe taco or cool. But you get him drunk and that kid will not shut up.
So we need to find that Goldilocks zone of just inebriated enough.
Just inebriated enough, you know? Just like, yeah.
Let me just backtrack and say, the moniker does not condone using autistic people as props at the gaming table. It was a joke. It was a joke.
Yeah, none of us really endorse using people as props, unless it's like you have a Confederate who is totally just coming in to knowingly play a part, like a guest GM or a guest villain, something like that. That's the only time you can consider using someone as a prop.
I don't know. I mean, we've done some D&D games that came, not D&D, vampire games back in the day during live action, and some of the guys that we used to game with knew girls that would love to be just trussed up like a Christmas present and hung in the corner for the entirety of the game session. I don't think they would have minded being used as props.
But they consented.
Well, yeah. At that point, it's a very different ball.
Yeah.
Like, if you're using someone as a prop, like, in your gaming group, you have to tread very carefully. It's like, hey, Blasphemous, is it alright if I use you as a prop for this kind of thing?
Yeah, I need a token Mexican. Come here. Put this hat on.
Read this.
Do you know Pancho Villa? Did you have dinner together?
Right? But you have to, like, very important to just first and foremost make sure that people are okay with you using them as props, and then explain what you want to them, ideally away from your group, so that they don't quite get the whole gist of it on your mouth. So it adds a layer of immersion, but it has to be done with care.
Tactfully.
And tactfully. Yeah, with tact, yes.
With tact.
There are some props that are just right out. Do not bring them to the table whatsoever. I don't care if your character is a superhero with, what I dare say, Stark technology, and you have heat-seeking, vibrating neck massagers that also explode on impact. Don't bring a vibrating neck massager to your game group and leave it on the table, because that's just not right.
I mean,
unless you don't want that smell lingering in the room.
Yeah.
If you're going to bring a prop, at least make sure that you think about having a prop that's going to be appropriate for everybody, even if they have, especially if they have kids that might run in the room.
Yeah, this doesn't apply to our gaming table. This is only for you losers.
another thing to worry about as props is, if you're wearing a costume, don't be the guy who's playing the superhero that only wears Speedos and do that to game.
Oh, like the picture of the guy wearing the pig costume for the demotivational?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, have some tact with it. Talk to people beforehand, especially your GM.
LARP is silly on its own right. Superhero LARP is even over the top.
We have our own superhero LARPer in the greater Seattle area.
Phoenix Jones.
Yep.
Yeah. Love that guy.
Screw that guy.
Two sides.
Hey, I am all about villainy for a better tomorrow, and Phoenix Jones needs to be knocked down a block. We pay taxes for a reason. And these taxes go to the police. The police also have this thing called an oversight committee. So if they go too far, we can be like, hey, you done fucked up. Give me a refund on my tax money. We cannot put Phoenix Jones wearing a mask in the box and have him go, well, that guy was trying to steal a purse. Fuck that guy. Fuck him in the neck with a piece of barbed wire. Rusted and a little twisted on the end. Fuck him hard. Fuck him long.
Wow, that is the first time I've heard you mention Mr. Tetanus in, like, probably 8 years.
You brought up Phoenix Jones. That guy legitimately makes me want to be a supervillain for better tomorrow because, hey, we pay taxes. I don't pay Phoenix Jones to go out and bust crime. I pay the police officers to do that so they can do their goddamn job. Phoenix Jones, I can outrun him, but I can't outrun Motorola, so I think I know who's doing a better job.
Tell us how you really feel, old-timer.
Well, how I really feel? I really feel like we should have more supervillains out there going, hey, we don't need vigilantes. We already pay people to do this damn job.
I know exactly what your villain name would be. The Carpetbagger.
Nope. I would go by The Fool. King for a day. Fool for a lifetime. And I would jaywalk a lot.
You do that in this city, you might get taken out by a pedestrian.
I jaywalk and I get taken out by a pedestrian. Holy shit! I can take a hit from a pedestrian. I took a bicycle rider at high speed a couple of years ago and I got a bump on my elbow, so I think I could take a pedestrian.
Yep, you were almost a speed bump.
I have been a speed bump before, multiple times. That's how I got that little dent in my knee. Or not my knee, but my shin.
Ah, ow.
Yeah, the guy was driving in the lane that doesn't really exist.
Oh, off on the shoulder?
Off on the shoulder, and he was going to take a left, and I didn't see him because I figured, hey, there's no cars past those two lanes. Nobody's supposed to drive in the shoulder. Next thing I know, I'm rolling up on the hood of a car, and I'm like, hey, there's a car here. And hey, this pavement hurts. Who put pavement here? What a stupid place for pavement. All right, so we are getting near the end. Very much so. We've gone over time again, so it's time for our last thoughts.
I think if you do props with enough tact on both the usage and the thematics of the prop, they can be worth something. But if you don't, it's just too much.
I would say use props, especially handouts, early and often. As much effort as a GM can put into props, go for it. Props add that extra layer of immersion and appreciation by the players that the GM is putting more than the standard amount of work into a game.
Make sure you know how fully, how invested you actually are before you go out and blow a shit ton of money.
When you have players who bring their own props, like they bring a notebook and they volunteer to be a documancer or something, encourage them. If they want to bring stuff that helps the game go along smoothly, encourage the shit out of them. In-game and out-of-game rewards for everybody.
Documancer.
Documancer!
I'm going to start referring to every court scribe I run into as a documancer.
Oh yeah.
Pardon me, documancer, have you the transcription from last week's, you know, little soiree? Because if you do, I'm going to stab you in the neck. It's the rogue time!
And, you know, this brings up another fun point, is just don't be... You bring a thing, so you get a reward. Blanket rewards work really well.
Yeah. You know, someone brings a notepad, volunteers to be the note jockey. There you go. Everybody in game, all of a sudden, you guys go to a tavern, you start gambling. Everybody wins like 6 silver. It's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Something small.
There's nothing like rewarding people who don't put any effort in the game.
Within reason. It has to be done, again, with tact.
I would reward the documancer first and foremost, but that's me personally.
Well, they get the in-game rewards of, like, their character gets recognition in some way, whatever their end goal is. They get a little more story time.
Oh, you're the guy who shot the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Wick style. Let's kill your ass. Oh, fuck. My John Wick album is elsewhere. God damn it.
All right, on that note, guys, we will catch you on the flip side. Blasphemous signing out.
Guys are counting to this, guys.
Moniker, see ya.
Game Goblin, and don't forget, like, comment, subscribe, check us out on our social media sites. We're available on Facebook, MeWe, YouTube, Twitter. Send us a message. If you have a show idea, hit us up.
Also, if you guys have any great stories about props you've used in-game, any suggestions or things you liked about it, send us a message. We're always open, and we got plenty of time to read them, folks.
We're just so lonely.
Notice me, senpai.
Bush still to 9/11.